This episode of the Humane Podcast is brought to you by the civic engagement podcast, Future Hindsight. Join them for a brand new season focusing on rebuilding America in a post-COVID world. In their first episode, they learn how to keep voters engaged once the election cycle is over and why that's important for democracy. Throughout the season, they'll learn how we must rethink areas of our economy, education system, police force, antitrust enforcement, and more, all while providing listeners with actionable tips and tricks to help build a stronger, more just America. Listen to Future Hindsight wherever you get your podcasts or at futurehindsight.com. You are listening to the Humane Podcast. Humane is your first look at the startups and industry titans that are leading and disrupting artificial intelligence, data science, future of work, and developer education. I am your host, David Jacobovich, and you are listening to Humane. If you like this episode, remember to subscribe and leave a review. Now, on to the show. Welcome back to the Humane Podcast, listeners. Today on the show, we have the CTO of Play Magnus and the CEO of Solve Oslo, Felipe Longet. I'm super excited to engage in this conversation today because many of you know, as a data scientist, chess is one of the big sports in the world that we love to learn about, not only with coding, but playing and staying mentally active. And back in 2016, I attended the 5 World Chess Tournament in New York City and got to see firsthand behind the glass Magnus Carlsen play against another world grandmaster. And little did we know at the time, but Felipe was there. And we didn't meet yet, but here we are today learning about everything, not only in the world of chess, but also in AI and ML and what you're doing with startups. So Felipe, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks, David. Looking forward to this. I mean, we've been emailing for a long time, but now we're finally here and it will be fun to just kick off and talk a bit about all these things that you mentioned. You had a lot there on the introduction, but I have 2 roles, basically. I work as a CEO in Solve Oslo, where we do product development and consulting. We have a focus on machine learning and then also a bit on med tech. But at the same time, I'm also a CTO at Play Magnus. And it's kind of funny. Both offices are strategically located at the same floor in the same building. So I have this double agent life running back and forth between the offices. But now with the corona situation, the only positive thing about this spectacle is that I can actually work from home and then it's kind of easy to switch context. But of course, that doesn't mean it's worth it.
You know, we're seeing with coronavirus or COVID-19 that life's become digital first, and we almost have these digital twins. Like you mentioned, you had your in-person office for the ventures that you're growing, but everything's gone digital. And it's amazing to see, like, in the history you've been involved with Play Magnus. I mean, it's gone from, you know, Magnus Carlsen, world champion, to this app where anyone like myself can learn and practice and learn from the great, to an app that's even built in data science and AI as well. I'd love to hear about, you know, your journey with the team and the app, how that's evolved over the years.
Yeah, this started back in 2013, actually. So it was quite cutting edge. It was quite an ambition back then. So it was Magnus Carlsen himself and his father that kind of, they wanted to enter the digital space and do something with this brand building, basically. But their vision was to use chess as a fun tool to make the world a smarter place. And yeah, the first ideas were not the best ones. It was having chess pieces with Magnus Carlsen's face on it. Fortunately, there were objections against that. And now you can see that we've made tons of apps. And the reason being is that that's a good way to spread your brand, to create awareness, and also to spread joy. I mean, it's actually, I hope people find these apps fun. I would rather see my kids playing chess on their phone than than other, maybe I shouldn't mention specifics, but other games in general. And I do believe that chess can make the world a smarter place. I mean, it's not proven yet, actually, that chess has an effect on your intelligence, that you become more intelligent by playing chess. But there's at least a correlation between intelligent people and chess. So if you pick a random chess player, there's a higher probability that that chess player is more intelligent than a random person in general. So there's definitely a correlation, but we don't know if one leads to the other directly. All the smart people want to play chess. It might be that as well. Anyway, it's a practice for brain activity, that's for sure. I wear this iWatch, right? And there you have, if your heart rate is too high, you get a warning. And it's never triggered, apart from when I spent some time at the chess club and I was playing this Blitz game, then it actually triggers. So yeah, it's sports and it's a lot of brain activity going on. I find it fun to work with. Well, back to the story. I'm branching off here. So back to the story. Yeah, so we found out that we're going to do an app. That could be a good start. At the moment, it was Play Magnus was a company with one person. I wasn't hired there. They went to a consulting company. I was working in that consulting company with innovation stuff. When I heard about the project, I just left all the projects I was working on and just focused on Play Magnus. And we created the app in 2 months, actually. It was a heck of a marathon code monkey period where we didn't know where we were going. It was just... yeah, we just did something. But that was a nice experience. And of course, the code now is not readable, but we're working on it, refactoring the whole thing. Yeah, so that was the first Play Magnus app. Already there, we had the AI, which plays like Magnus. This AI is interesting because in the company, in Play Magnus, there were two developers that were hired early on, like after the CEO. And it was me full-time, and then we also hired Tord Romstad part-time. And he has actually developed the first iteration of Stockfish. So he developed this Glaurum, which is like an early version of Stockfish. It was his code, and then it branched off to Stockfish. So we had this sophisticated early version of Stockfish. We couldn't use Stockfish because it's an open source, and it has a open source license, which we can't put into the app, but we used this early iteration and we modified it to be able to emulate Magnus's play. I'm really not letting you talk, David, so I'm not sure if I should just take a break so you can say something.
Oh no, this is super fun to learn. I mean, everything that I'm hearing so far that you're sharing, Felipe, is that to make the world a smarter place, it starts with seeing where are the challenges with humans. And we like mentally challenging tasks. And by we, I mean like data scientists and people who like code and math. And, you know, in my early days of learning, I was playing with poker and, you know, blackjack and a lot of these card games and realizing that memory palaces is so essential for understanding patterns and that behavior that is repeating over time. And it sounds like the work that you've done with your core engineers and the branching of Stockfish, right? We talk about in code all the time with Git and version control, all products branch in different directions based on the big inspiration. And it sounds like that big inspiration was building an app that plays like Magnus. And it's helped a lot of players, you know, upskill themselves to get to a new level, but then also to be inspired that, you know, should we be spending all our time playing Words with Friends and Angry Birds, but, you know, maybe there's something more, especially during times like COVID, right? What can we be spending our time to learn new skills and pick up that craft? It's incredible to see that, you know, what you've built has evolved from 2013 to now this whole series of apps and this whole like empire, if you will, that has expanded with the Magnus brand.
I think you touched on something there that I want to elaborate a bit on. And Yeah, so we were very thorough with making sure that the app feels personal. So you, when you open the app, it kind of feels like you're going to actually play Magnus. And it's branded throughout the app with this appearance. And also this kind of chessy black and white feeling. And I think that helps. It makes the app a bit personal. You have Magnus in your pocket and you can challenge him. I think that's crucial to the experience. And that's why it's not just another chess app. It's a totally different experience from just playing random chess against AI. Because actually playing against AI is known to be quite boring in general. And also if you play against an AI of at the maximum performance, you don't stand a chance. Not even Magnus does. So as you probably know, Magnus uses AI to like Stockfish and Lila Chess Zero to actually train and find out some new combinations.
Well, I think it's interesting that we look at world-class players. And I mean, that's in any sport. You're saying like peak performance. We see like Formula One, where you have Lewis Hamilton, who's won so many races with Mercedes, training with simulations. You even had basketball, the late LeBron James, who was always, you know, even using virtual reality and different tools to make sure he can get that experience to be perfect. So it sounds like, as you mentioned, Magnus is like going against the top chess AI engines to see, can he break his current mind limits to get and achieve new peak performance.
Yeah, and also analyze his previous games, right? So you can go in and look at the what could have happened if I did another move, or my opponent did this move, and how strong was it actually? Like one thing is as far as they can see, but how strong was it? And I could mention that I actually talked to Magnus after an important game, and he said that his opponent probably had analyzed the position with the Lila, and he had analyzed it with Stockfish, and that was a deciding factor. So it's okay, it might be a far stretch here, but it's actually AI against AI at some points, because they try to memorize as much as possible within the branches that they play. I think that's fascinating. And I don't know, maybe it's a merge between machine, man and machine, right? So maybe this is how it starts, by expanding what we can do, our abilities, with software that kind of integrates right now with an interface that's not like totally great. It's not the implants. It's not intuitive in the same way as it will be in the future. And when it comes to sports and using digital tools and machine learning in general, I'm also working on another project, which I actually can mention. it's called 7-6, and actually it's an app where you can record your tennis swing, and you get a lot of attributes and measurements on how that performance is compared to a pro player. So we collect. And it will only become better with all the data that we collect. But already it's we showed it to the best coach in Norway, training with best tennis player called Kasper Ruud. And he was like impressed. Wow, he'd never seen something like that. And we managed to create this in just a few months. I'm wondering what the future holds for these kind of applications. And here we're using a smartphone. So the potential here is fantastic. I think we'll see a huge revolution in how sports is executed based on what machines can learn about it, and not only humans.
I think you're spot on there, Felipe. I mean, tennis, for example, is, I think, a sport that we both have passion for. You know, I went to Tunisia a few years ago to live a pipe dream, to see if I could qualify in the ITF tournament. And of course, I didn't do so great because I'm a data scientist, not a tennis player. But I had a lot of fun. And I think what's so fascinating is everyone wants data. We want to understand what are we doing good or what can we improve on. And usually it's human to human relationship. You'll have a real in-life tennis coach who's saying, nope, lift the ball higher, make sure you get it centered over, or you're not going deep enough into the court, or, you know, whatever is failing. And that's the tennis sport. But I think everywhere across the board, we can see that. We've seen that in the last 10 years, the movement has been to somewhat automated machines, but they weren't very smart. So in sports like tennis that we both love so dear, there were machines that you would program them, hit the ball to these three places on the court, and I just run around like a maniac and hit it back so I can at least get my cardio in. But now I've been seeing even on like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, there's new tennis machines that are claiming to use computer vision so that they can, you know, find the right spot to help me hone in on the skill. And it sounds like what you're doing with 7-6 is also quite unique because, you know, we should all be able to find that coaching, but it's not always accessible to everyone.
Exactly. It's not always accessible. And maybe I should be careful here, but it becomes a bit subjective. Like to actually find out the parameters which you could use to program this thing and to do the machine learning algorithms, we had to spend a lot of time with tennis coaches and try to kind of distill what they're actually saying. So you listen to three different coaches and they say the same thing, but with their own words. And I think computers can be better at that. They can give you the kind of the facts and we can pre-program patterns that you can see and visualizations. And yeah, I think this will improve a lot of sports in general. But when it comes to chess, there are a lot of things that you just need to be good at, right? It's like that in every sport, but in chess, there's a lot of mental things like memory. Of course, you can't escape it. You need to have a good memory.
Listeners, you've heard on today's episode all about the data that drives the decisions for world chess champions like Magnus Carlsen and how online chess has grown as an esport throughout the COVID-19 era. One thing I know for certain is that to become a champion in any sport and any business, this requires you to keep optimizing. It's about those incremental improvements. I recently listened to the Keep Optimizing podcast, which went in depth on topics to improve the digital world. Think SEO, email marketing, and conversion rates. These metrics aren't only for world-class champions, they're for your business and e-commerce decisions too. As we gear up for a digital-first holiday season, I can't help but think of all the ads I'm seeing on Facebook and Pinterest. On the Keep Optimizing podcast, host Chloe Thomas dives deep into these platforms and other magic moments for the world of advertising. I enjoyed one of her recent episodes where she discussed Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and she shared some great tips and tricks for email and text campaigns. We're all going direct to consumer, and Keep Optimizing is a show to keep you in the know on essential e-commerce marketing. Now let's apply that to our chess game too.
But I've been thinking about what is good memory, and I haven't been thinking about it because I'm especially smart. I've been exposed to this the last 7 years, and I've seen these chess players everywhere playing, and I noticed that in the beginning, when I wasn't exposed too much to chess, I was looking at these chess players and I was seeing like these superhuman attributes and patterns. And how can they remember like whole chess game? How is that possible? I can't even remember my last three moves. And how is it possible to talk about previous games and even play them? And you don't need to be that good chess player. I mean, far above average, but still it's doable for all of us. And the thing is, I figured out that it's like everything else, like practice, repetition, understanding, because it could be math, but it could also be geometry, but also linguistics. It's also you put a name on an opening, you put a name on a strategy, and it's easier to connect the dots, right? And all of this kind of reveals to me that, okay, there are people that are fantastic at playing some, like Magnus is the world champion, he's by far a legendary player. But now I can actually understand how that came to be and how that's possible, and that it's actually not being superhuman. It's doable, and it's something that I think most people can become quite good chess players. So I think that's motivating.
Yeah, I know. I love chess. I mean, I don't play it as much as I wish I did, but I recall my middle school and high school days. I think middle school was one of my favorite times prior to the computers, right? Chess was only an in-person experience. And I just know Blitz Chess, I can recall it right now. I mean, it's as if there's this muscle memory, right? You're going in for these predefined moves because you've experienced it over and over. You're predicting this deterministic or this behavioral pattern for how to operate. And I think that's where we're seeing technology go. I mean, today in the world of COVID, we see some fantastic shows out there like Devs on Hulu and Westworld on HBO and Upload on Amazon. They're all talking about how much free will is there, or how much can we predict or get predetermined. And it sounds incredible, right? I mean, when we look at peak performance, poker, chess, other sports, I mean, Magnus Carlsen isn't playing 10 games a week. Like, I mean, it could be hundreds or thousands, right? Depending on where they are. And we even see that in tennis, right? Like, I remember watching Rafael Nadal, my favorite tennis player. Well, Roger Federer might be my truly favorite one, but there's always a contention there. And that both of them, I mean, when you see them with their coaches, they are still practicing dozens of hours a month to stay at peak performance. I think one of the misnomers in peak performance sports with Magnus Carlsen is that, oh, he doesn't have to practice anymore. He's just there. But what happens if he doesn't practice? Is he going to still get peak performance, right?
Yeah, muscle memory, as you say, but I think it's, I have my own way of looking at it. And I think when you repeat something a lot, you're creating shortcuts. So you're wiring your brain to do that specific task perfectly. You do this over and over and over, and it just becomes embedded in your software, so to say. And I think that's basically the language of the brain. And I think you can do that, as I told you before, with symmetry, with logic, with numbers, with music, all of that. But I also think you can do that with feelings. And I think maybe there's a connection there, like the intuition part, where you kind of feel you're in some flow. And I think you feel that because you're experiencing these shortcuts. You're experiencing that, but you're not consciously thinking about it. So you can actually take a much more simpler example than being the world champion at chess. Like when you drive a car, you're not thinking about driving, at least not when you've driven for a few years. So you're thinking about everything else, but you're still doing quite a complex task. So it's subconscious versus conscious. And I think you train your subconscious, you create these really good software packages, which are hidden beyond our understanding. And you're talking about, you also mentioned free will, right? And the way I see it, it's like, we, of course, we don't have free will. It's all deterministic. But we experience it because we don't know better, right? We just, there's an emerging thing going on, and nobody knows exactly why that's going on. And some believe that it's everywhere, like panpsychism and stuff like that. And that's up for debate. But obviously, it's deterministic, maybe probabilistic if you want to go into quantum mechanics and all of that. But yeah, actually, I lost the thread. What am I talking about?
Well, I think what we're talking about, and this is so interesting though, because I got us on this tangent about Devs, Westworld, and Upload. I mean, what is that fluid behavior? You're talking about getting into flow, and flow is so important for learning anything. And it sounds like a lot of the world today, as we know, learning is not just about project-based learning, but, you know, love it or hate it, there's a lot of credentials out there, and you're having to test and be proctored and being monitored for results. Although we've seen school systems like the University of California drop the need for the SAT and certain MBA programs drop the need for GRE and GMAT, proctoring is still very important. And I wanted to explore a little bit about this area as well for what you're seeing in the world of chess. You know, it's all moved online. You know, Magnus is leading the charge. But I think one of the concerns we always see is, well, are people being honest? Are they using a simulator or just, you know, going for it What are you seeing with these online chess tournaments and how we're ensuring people are keeping honest?
Yeah, in chess, you have a few mechanisms for anti-cheating, and they've been around for a long time. Obviously, you can actually, if you have a game, you can do these anti-cheating algorithms, which will find out if you're playing too similarly to one of the popular chess engines. And we detect cheaters in Chess24 all the time. And also even in Play Magnus, because we had these yearly competitions. Of course, some of them were cheating a lot to get the top scores. But that's kind of the digital aspect of it. Of course, you can, in a tournament, when you're sitting at home and playing others, you can be cheating, right? So, yeah, you have to have your webcam on to play in one of the Magnus Invitational, which was the most recent one. But also, you have to, we ask them to install another camera, which is behind them, to monitor what they're doing. I think with newer technology, we also start trusting people more. I could be wrong here, but if you're in a chess tournament and you need to go to the bathroom, you can't take your camera with you, right? So at some point, we worry less about these things. I think it's a good thing. And I think it's happening also with employment in general. Everyone works from home now, right? Like, we knew that was going to work fine, but I think a lot of people were surprised. Like, whoa, this is actually working, and my employees are performing maybe better. Like, how can that be? They can do whatever they want. They're working at home. And of course they are. I think freedom for most people gives like a responsibility, which is good. And also, people are different. Some people have genes for staying awake at night. People are absolutely different. And I think creating an environment which makes them like thrive in this, in their hobbies or their work in the best possible way, that's fantastic. And I also think that if you're a manager listening to this and you're thinking, yeah, but I can't trust it, there's always a few people that will take advantage of the situation, then I would say, okay, but do you actually want to have those people around? Like, do you want to have them in your company? Maybe the hiring process should be better then. And also, I think there will be less and less of those people because the culture will change. This will be the way to work moving forward. Not only because of COVID, I think, but because it's more effective and it gives this type of freedom.
Yeah, it's so interesting that, of course, we're spending a lot of the conversation seeing how chess is being reshaped in the world, being digital first with the Magnus Invitational, but it's more than that. It's work. I mean, we are moving to a distributed society. Post-COVID world will be one where, sure, there will be some in-person, there will be some distributed. I think that will still be to be determined how that will shake out for different cities. But I think what's not as unclear is that we are moving more into a device first world. And we've been spending a lot of time on the show today talking about, you know, chess and the whole evolution of the sport, but you do a lot more than at Play Magnus. You're also involved leading up new tech ventures. And I'd love to hear about what are some of these projects and ideas that you're incubating at Solve Oslo.
There's a lot of cool stuff happening, and we see a lot of different projects that we can contribute to, but we're also starting from scratch on many of these. So as I said, we do both consulting and product development in-house. One of our cool engagements has been to work with, it's like a camera that can scan your eye and retina and recognize patterns on diabetes 2. People with diabetes too, and therefore find out if you're becoming blind. So a blindness, a prediction, basically. That's interesting. This doesn't have to be expensive equipment, because I think it's a solved problem with quite expensive equipment, but with equipment that could cost like $100, it's not. And we've managed to do that. We've helped the company develop that. And it's only a matter of time before that's produced and shipped off to all over the world where it could be expensive to get your eye scanned by hospitals and so forth. So you could basically do this at home.
It's so interesting thinking about cameras because, I mean, there's camera technology that's been out for a while to forensically confirm that a painting is authentic or that the fabric of a handbag that's a Louis Vuitton is real as well. We featured on an earlier episode of Humane, a founder particularly who works in that space. But I wonder, in that case, they said, we're actually able to use the cameras from the iPhones and the Samsung Galaxy devices to get that quality. Do you see a future where we can be, you know, holding up a phone to the iris and scanning and seeing that performance? Or, you know, what might those machines of the future look like?
Absolutely. I see it and we experience it. Like every year, these new phones come out. And when we were doing this tennis project where you're supposed to record a tennis player and then see how the swing is being executed and how well the performance is compared to a pro player, I actually didn't know that you could record slow motion, 240 frames per second on 1080p on most iPhones today. And that's insane, like the opportunities. We were thinking like, can we actually execute this at 30, 60 FPS? But it doesn't have to be that way. We managed to pull it off anyway on 60 FPS. But yeah, I mean, the opportunities are huge. And I also think wearables will be like it's, we've seen it, but it will be a huge thing moving forward. There's so many health benefits you can get. I also think people will be more, well, exactly right now with COVID-19 is maybe not the best occasion to say so, but I think in the future, we still will have a situation where people are less ill and things are going quite well health-wise. So you start thinking about longevity instead of just survival, right? And I think all these wearables will contribute to that. So you'll be much more occupied with the health in general. And not only physical health, but also mental health. And I think at some point we'll figure out how to come closer to the connection between a scan and a psychological state of the mind.
Yeah, I think mental health is going to be just as important as we're emerging in a post-COVID world. I recently shared my top 25 trends for Q2 2020, where I was looking at tech investments as an investor in the space, and mental health tech is one that I am very bullish on. We even see devices in the United States like Muse, which helps you meditate. We have the Aura Ring, where you wear this ring that can track, you know, the pulse for you, for your heart as well. So there's so much going on in the medical space. I mean, yeah. And what do you think, Felipe, is helping accelerate this? Is it more the AI and this breakthrough in compute? Is it the capability to get sensors so small? I mean, what are some of the things you're seeing that's gaining interest and traction in this space?
That's a hard question to answer. I think there's so many factors, but of course it's hardware gets quite improved every year, but it's not in the same way as before, where you, for instance, the graphics on games is insane already. Of course, everyone was hyped when they saw the PlayStation 5 tech demo, Unreal demo. Wow, fantastic. But really, it's there's so much more now than just graphics. We've come to a point where we're wearing the technology that we previously had in a living room in our offices and we're huge. We're just wearing it. And there's most people will have smartwatches and Bluetooth devices all over their body. And of course the smartphone, but that will shrink or at least become thinner and thinner up to a point where it's maybe a bracelet or something. And you can bend it, you can, for all I know, you will swallow your smartphone at some point. But it's, I also think nanotechnology will at some point become cheap to use. And manipulation of genes, it's all there. But there are so many sciences just expanding exponentially, really. We're used to it now, so we don't think so much about it. We're used to seeing new stuff. That's why we can sometimes have a feeling that, okay, it's not going that fast, but it really is. If you pay attention and if you look at all different technology is being expanded. It's a lot. I don't have a better answer than that.
No, I mean, I think that is so perfect because at the onset of our show today, we were talking about GitHub branching and how software branches into different versions. I mean, looking at how Stockfish and the core engineers at Play Magnus have developed new technology to see the direction of AI. I mean, I think that's exactly what we're seeing with all these hardware and software products today. You mentioned, Felipe, the PlayStation 5, which is coming out. We know the Samsung Galaxy S20 Ultra, the iPhone 12, even the Unreal Engine 5. I mean, all this technology is accelerating at such a fascinating clip. And I think part of those trends is collaborative science publications. No longer are we at the level where it takes 12 months, 2 years to get published and see research. I mean, COVID alone, we've seen what? It's like thousands. I saw the number somewhere, 80,000 papers around COVID. Who knows if they're all valid? But the point is, there's so much research accelerating. And that's leading to us a world, I think, that's going to be humans augmented by machines, right? Whether it's, you know, playing chess, whether it's wearing a device to detect type 2 diabetes so that you don't get COVID. I know, at least in New York, we saw some statistics, some early indicators that about 25% of the people who have died from COVID are type 2 diabetic. It's so shocking that this is a big problem in the world.
It is. And we can do something about it. And I also think these problems shouldn't be a problem that one company is solving by themselves. Of course, they could be developing a product, but we need to become more connected on these things, especially on medtech. And I think with COVID-19, we've actually seen that, and people are starting to understand that collaboration across huge distances is not, it's the same. It, like if you have an office in New York and Oslo, it doesn't matter. If you have 50 people in Oslo and 50 in New York, you're 100 people. That's the size of your company. So yeah, I think collaboration, of course, is important. And throughout the evolution of human beings or like history, it's always been like there are more and more people collaborating. So it started with tribes and then small cities. I'm doing this quite fast, but and then you have countries and continents and etc. And I think at some point it would just become global, like pure global collaboration, especially on science. No borders and full transparency, especially with the common goals of beating all diseases, which I think will happen at some point. Of course, viruses are tough, but it will happen. It's doable. It's not an impossible task to execute. And as I said, when we do that, it will be more about longevity, which I also think is important. A lot of people die of AIDS, and it's proven that it's dying of AIDS is not something that needs to happen. Degrading cells and your whole body is not something that needs to die eventually or to get deprecated, basically. So I think that also will eventually come. Not sure when, but there's a lot of people working on that. So it might be faster than we think.
Absolutely. It's the simulation that we're living in that many of us think is this world of COVID, but we're moving into a post-COVID world very fast. The economies are reopening. You know, in Norway, it is business as usual in the new normal. The United States has been moving into its new normal gradually as well. Felipe, what call to action would you like to share with our listeners today about the topics we've discussed and what you think is important for everyone to hear?
Okay, there's just so much I could say. Stay healthy, that's one. And still remember to stay a bit more at home and keep distances and all of that. I think that's important. Of course, we're getting to a stage where it's not as dangerous as before, but still you have other people's life on risk here if you're not careful. That's number one. But I also have a general advice, and that's, of course, to try out our Play Magnus app and also Magnus Trainer and all our apps and have fun with them. They're free, so just play and have fun and see if chess is something for you. And if you've never played chess before, you can try out the Magnus Trainer that actually teaches you chess from the very beginning. Like, you don't have to know how to move pieces to play that game. So stay healthy and play chess.
Chess On, whether it's on PlayMagnus, chess.com, or maybe you participate in a tournament, right? With Chess24, you could be in the next Magnus Invitational. It's incredible to see how we're bridging the gap of the digital and in real life world. Felipe Lange, CEO at Solve Oslo and CTO of PlayMagnus, thank you for joining us on Humane.
Thanks, David.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Humane Podcast. What do you think? Did the show measure up to your thoughts on artificial intelligence, data science, future of work, and developer education? Listeners, I want to hear from you so that I can offer you the most relevant, trend-setting, and educational content on the market. You can reach me directly by email at david@humanepodcast.com. Remember to share this episode with a friend, subscribe, and leave a review on your preferred podcasting app, and tune in to more episodes of Humane.